BBC News.
This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, November 15th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, a ProPublica investigation uncovered a pattern of irregularities within Colorado's family court system. We'll get the details from the reporter. The midterm red wave didn't materialize, but an emerging green wave did. That's coming up in H2O Radio's This Week in Water. Then we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth? Today on The Science Show, a newly published report shows that Colorado lags way behind its recycling goals. Host Susan Moran will discuss the report's findings with Suzanne Jones, Executive Director of EcoCycle, and Anja Brandon, a plastics policy analyst at Ocean Conservancy. At 9 a.m. comes another archival recording of British philosopher Alan Watts. Then at 9:30, Terry Reardon will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for headlines with KGNU's Luis Licon.
Students and families attended a Denver Public Schools board meeting yesterday to ask board members to rethink the closure of five schools. DPS administrators initially announced 10 school closures, but last week revised the number to five. Most of the schools slated for closure serve an elementary school age population. DPS cites low enrollment numbers as families move outside of the district in search for more affordable housing. The school board will vote on the matter later this week. Results continue to roll in for races that were too close to call last week. John Killen for KGNU has more.
The outcome of Colorado's closely watched 3rd congressional district is not expected until sometime tomorrow. That's the deadline for counties to receive tallies from military and overseas voters. As of Monday afternoon, Republican Representative Lauren Boebert held onto a narrow lead over Democratic challenger Adam Frisch. Representative Boebert is vying for a second term in the U.S. House and leads by 1,112 votes. CD3 is among a handful of races nationwide that will determine control of the House. Most observers expect Republicans to win a majority, but Adam Frisch remains confident. A spokeswoman says they trust the process and will wait for the results in CD3. Frisch initially led the race, but Boebert took a slim lead last week and has held on to it ever since. For now, she leads by about 1/3 of 1%. That margin is slightly more than what would lead to an automatic recount. Meanwhile, a measure to fund the Boulder Public Library has been approved by Boulder voters. A newly created Boulder Library District will provide dedicated property tax funding for the library. That will allow the library to restore staffing and services, implement programs and other services severely affected during the pandemic. Once the vote has been certified, a Board of Trustees will be established to guide the transition from city to library operations. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
Boulder Fire Rescue will launch a new round of community outreach and education efforts. Service includes car seat checks, CPR training, and home safety checks. Boulder Fire Rescue suspended many outreach services during the COVID-19 pandemic, but community members can now go to the Boulder Fire Rescue website to sign up. The Town of Superior Board voted 6-0 to repeal the approval of a downtown life sciences campus. The board voted on a controversial ordinance for the development application of the Coal Creek Innovation Park in August. The Daily Camera reports residents Ryan Hitchler and Jason Serbu submitted a petition for the town board to either repeal the ordinance or let residents vote on it. A special election would cost the town about $75,000. The developer PMB LLC, which had plans to redevelop the site, has the option to resubmit the application, but can also choose to abandon not to move forward with the project. The City of Boulder is including opportunities for citizens to provide input on the future of policing in Boulder. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The city has created the Reimage Policing Strategic Plan. The plan is to serve as a guiding document for the Boulder Police Department. The city is looking for input from all citizens, including historically excluded groups. Community members will be able to consider whether the proposed focus areas and strategies of the plan are likely to achieve the values the Boulder community has said matter most. A survey has been mailed to a random sample of households within the city of Boulder. The same survey will also be available starting November 18th on the BeHeardBoulder.org website. The survey will be in English and Spanish. A community advisory group is also in place and will assist in the organization of focus groups. The focus groups will include specific populations that are negatively affected by the current criminal justice system. The focus group and survey data will help inform future development of the Re-Image Policing Plan. The survey will continue through December 23rd. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
The city of Denver will lease two East Colfax motels to provide temporary housing for the homeless. KGNU's Jake Crowley has more.
The city of Denver will lease two East Colfax motels to provide temporary housing for the homeless. The nearly $1 million contract will reserve 36 units in the Westerner and Sand and Sage motels on East Colfax Avenue for temporary unhoused families and affordable housing. The city will hand over management of the properties next fall to Volunteers of America of Colorado, who will operate the facilities until 2028. According to the city's website, the city will begin to redevelop the units into affordable housing by 2028. For KGNU, I'm Jay Crowley.
The Broomfield Police Department is asking the public for help locating an owner of a vehicle connected to a sexual assault report that occurred back in September. The car is described as a white 2009 or 2015 Toyota Prius with a symbol or sticker on both sides. Photos of the vehicle can be seen at the Walgreens at the corner of Midway Boulevard and US 287, but police did not specify if the assault occurred in the same area. With any information, contact Detective Jennifer King Sullivan at 303-438-6461 or email jking.sullivan@broomfield.org. Today, snowfall is expected to stop around 8:30, but in Denver, we're going to see a high of 38 and a low of 20 with a current temperature of 24 degrees. In Fort Collins, there's going to be a high of 39 and a low of 18 with a current temperature of 22 degrees. And in Boulder, there's going to be a high of 35 and a low of 19 with a current temperature of 22 degrees. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. If you get a divorce in Colorado, and there's conflict over child custody, Colorado Family Court gives couples two options. First, you can take a court-appointed and often court-funded Child Family Investigator, or CFI, to look into your case. Or, if you can afford your own investigator, you can hire one of Colorado's 45 court-approved Personal Responsibility Evaluators, or PREs. Despite legislation enacted in January requiring that Colorado family courts expand domestic violence training and vet PREs before approving them as court experts, a recent ProPublica investigation by Hannah Dreyfus found that 4 out of the state's 45 court-appointed PREs have records of domestic violence. 1 in 5, nearly 6 times more than psychologists in other fields, have been publicly disciplined by the State Board of Psychologists. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Hannah Dreyfus about her reporting into what she calls Colorado's broken family court system. Her first story of the series focuses on one PRE in particular, Mark Kilmer, who has a documented history of domestic violence and a disturbing track record of dismissing reports of abuse.
So your story for ProPublica had a lot of really shocking details about Mark Kilmer and the impact he's had on the lives of domestic violence victims and victims of abuse. Tell me about some of these details and what you are able to uncover about these cases.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked the question of some of the details of the stories, because there were several parents who had worked with Kilmer who had shocking, shocking stories of their interactions. And I detailed two of those stories within the article. I mean, these two cases just literally blew my mind. You know, Alina's story, Alina is a 16-year-old whose family was assigned to be interviewed by Mark Kilmer after she was assaulted by her father. And Mark Kilmer basically said that the father's criminal assault was an aberration and that he otherwise had great parenting skills. And that's a quote. Mark Kilmer recommended that her dad continue to have control over her life.
Just to give listeners a feel for the nature of the assault that we are talking about, the hospital reported that her father had yanked a gold chain that Alina was wearing around her neck so hard that it looked like someone had tried to strangle her.
Yes, that was what the child welfare professional who examined her afterwards identified it as. And yeah, so that's the story that leads my article. So the other case was a mom who was concerned that her toddler had been sexually abused by the dad. And it wasn't only the mom who was concerned. I found police records. A social worker had called in and reported suspected abuse, child sexual abuse, for this 2-year-old girl with the local police. And despite the fact that this case was never closed, when Kilmer was appointed to determine what was going on in this case and who should receive custody, he didn't even contact the police investigator who was looking into whether or not this little girl had been sexually assaulted by the father. There was no record that he had even tried to speak with them about it. Further, in his recommendation to the court, Kilmer wrote in all capital letters that if the mom continued to bring her daughter for physical examinations because she was concerned that child sexual abuse could be taking place, that Kilmer would actually advise that the court restrict her parenting time further.
So you actually sat down with Kilmer and he was tremendously candid with you. He couldn't comment directly about the cases, but he had some incredibly shocking quotes about his philosophy and how he thinks about his role in the system and his choices. Can you tell me some of these quotes? Some really stood out.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you leave an interview, certain quotes stand out in your mind. The quote that just was blaring in my mind was, quote, "Just look at my resume, right? It's like, look at what I've done and who I am and what I've been trying to put together for myself. Do you think beneath all of this, I'm some kind of monster?" And I think what I heard in several different forms from Kilmer is that if a father presents a certain way, then it is unbelievable that he could have committed crimes that a spouse or child is saying that he committed. That exact same thought comes up again. This is a quote from Kilmer. "People come in and say, you know, this person has been terrible to me for 17 years. And you've just been hanging in there all that time and you had 5 kids. How is it really that bad all that time?" So it was very surprising to hear that point of view reflected so blatantly from somebody who's a professional in this field working with victims.
I don't understand why there aren't any checks and balances. I mean, Colorado passed a law and it came into effect January of this year for this exact purpose, to train people in the court dealing with domestic violence and victims of abuse. It also required that the court vet PREs, like Kilmer. So I guess, you know, isn't there a standard that PREs have to meet in order to still be considered an expert? Or what point is an expert no longer an expert?
Well, I mean, I think that's a very good question. The answer right now is no. There are options for judges to take place in additional training, but many don't opt to engage in those sessions. Some do, but many don't. And the pushback against it is that people are very concerned that being trained in domestic violence and child abuse could bias judges in a way.
How would that happen?
I mean, it is a national conversation taking place in a lot of states. But in answer to your question, there's not a lot of mandatory education and training in these issues that court personnel have to go through. It's actually only in a very select number of states, including Colorado, where there's any sort of mandatory education for court personnel. And that's, once again, only as of January 2022. And it's interesting to note that several PREs actually resigned in protest after legislation was passed that they required additional training and supervision by the courts. I actually quote from one of them in my story. He was a PRE who worked in Colorado for decades. Bill Fife, after legislation was passed last year, he left the field in protest and many left along with him. This is not an issue that's exclusive to Kilmer, and it's not an issue that's exclusive to Colorado. These views that particularly women, though not exclusively, but particularly women make up abuse allegations in order to influence a court system in their favor are widespread and shockingly widely accepted by judges. I have another story in the works that I think is going to create a small earthquake because it's about a custody dispute that's taking place in real time. And in that story, I'm going to specify the judge who took a very active role in this case. It's going to be just as shocking, if not more, than this story.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading it. Hannah, thank you so much for talking with me today and for all of your reporting.
Of course. Thank you. And yeah, I look forward to talking again after the next story comes out.
Hannah Dreyfus is a reporter for ProPublica. Her most recent reporting looks at Colorado's broken family court system. Since releasing her article on Mark Kilmer, he has been suspended from the court system. For updates like this one and more, you can follow Hannah on Twitter. For that link and links to her ongoing reporting, visit news.kgnu.org. For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
Time now for This Week in Water with H2O Radio's Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
One of the winners of the midterm elections? The climate. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Last Tuesday's election was really good for the climate. Voters did not create the massive red wave that could have swamped efforts to combat global warming. Instead, there could be an emerging green wave supporting climate action.
Among the winners, the Inflation Reduction Act passed by Congress in August, which combines decreasing greenhouse gas emissions with economic development and supports electric vehicles and renewables. Not a single Republican voted for it.
Even though the legislation may not be all that's needed to reduce carbon dioxide emissions, it's still the country's first comprehensive climate law. Now, with the Democrats controlling the Senate, it's unlikely Republicans will be able to obstruct Biden's implementation of the act.
In addition, voters in New York passed a proposal that will spend $4.2 billion on water infrastructure, climate change mitigation, and environmental projects, all while adding 100,000 jobs. They also kept Governor Kathy Hochul instead of a challenger who had pledged to lift a ban on fracking.
Democratic governors who support combating climate change were elected in 10 states, including Wes Moore of Maryland, who put climate change at the center of his campaign. In Massachusetts, the Democratic Attorney General, who sued ExxonMobil for misleading about global warming science, was elected governor.
In the first 2 weeks of the COP27 climate conference in Egypt, the talks were focused on keeping warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, and they included a warning about the risk of not succeeding. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres implored world leaders to act, saying, "We're on a highway to climate hell with our foot still on the accelerator."
For the first time, the agenda includes funding for loss and damage, which nations most impacted by climate change have been demanding. But so far, only five countries, not including the U.S., have pledged funds.
During the conference, more than 25 countries, which contain over one-third of the world's forests, launched a partnership to reverse the loss of trees and land degradation.
The U.S. is launching an initiative in a partnership with the Rockefeller Foundation and the Bezos Earth Fund for a voluntary carbon trading market to boost investment in clean energy projects in developing countries.
New regulations on methane emissions were announced by the U.S., Canada, and Nigeria, and small island nations aligned to call for a windfall tax on big oil, which the Prime Minister of Antigua told the conference is profiting as the planet burns.
There may be more than 33,000 people at COP27, and activist Greta Thunberg tweeted that more than 600 of them are linked to fossil fuels. She added, "If you want to address malaria, you don't invite the mosquitoes."
Most of the substantive work at COP27 occurs during the second week that ends on Friday, November 18th.
When bees or butterflies set out to find pollen or nectar, they rely on numerous cues to remember which plants to visit, from a flower's pattern, color, or shape, to its fragrance and even changes in humidity.
And recent research has shown that bumblebees can sense a flower's electric field through tiny hairs on their heads and bodies.
These so-called E-fields arise because flowers are negatively charged and the atmosphere is positively charged. Bees are also positively charged, so their floral flybys change the electric field around a flower for up to 2 minutes and signal to any insect in the vicinity that nectar and pollen might be tapped out.
But new research out this week showed that spraying fertilizers and pesticides can disrupt this delicate dance and confuse pollinators. That's because the chemicals also have a charge and can change a flower's electric field for up to 25 minutes, much longer than a shift caused by the wind or a bee's visit.
In the study, bumblebees avoided lavender plants sprayed with fertilizer. The chemicals might be stressing the plants enough that they produce compounds which change the electrical field.
We already know that many fertilizers and pesticides are harmful to pollinators, and this new research might lead to better ways to do agriculture so it's not literally and figuratively a buzzkill. And finally, scientists have found a new way to remove microplastics from water. And the solution could be sitting on your breakfast table.
Researchers at Princeton used egg whites to create a material that not only removed plastics, but also salt from seawater.
The egg whites were freeze-dried and heated to 900 degrees Celsius to create an aerogel of interconnected strands of carbon fibers that can filter salt and microplastics by up to 98%.
They say the material is less expensive to produce and more effective than activated carbon, which is currently one of the cheapest methods to purify water.
Also, compared with reverse osmosis, which requires a significant amount of energy, the egg white solution requires only gravity to operate and wastes no water. And it didn't matter if you scrambled or fried the eggs first, it still worked.
The team said other proteins also worked, which is crucial to making sure the solution does not affect the food supply. So it's no yolk. Egg whites can filter water.
That's it for this week in water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
We go now to our comment line and the listeners who share what they think about what they hear on KGNU.
It's a little bit 5 p.m. here Wednesday night, and there's no 1390, no signal here in Denver for BBC. Thank you.
If you have a signal issue to report, you can do so on a form linked to the front page of KGNU.org. If you'd like to share a comment about something you heard on KGNU, you can call us at 303-447-9911 and leave a voicemail. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. That's all the time we have for today's program. Thanks to Luis Licon, John Kellen, Jake Crowley, Alexis Kenyon, Rosanna Longo-Better, Jamie Sedler, and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after the news headlines from the BBC.